Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio program. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. So glad that you joined us on the broadcast today. What do you think about the idea of ethanol? I've been just doing some informal polling over the last couple of days, just asking people, what do you think about ethanol? And most people, you know, right away say, at least in this area, and at least in the folks that I've been asking, most of them right away talk about that they don't like ethanol for use in their cars. They feel that, the blend that they have, the ethanol blend where they mix it in with the gasoline, is bad for their vehicle and causes problems and, you know, kind of gunks up some of the mechanism inside the car there and causes problems. And so you got a much higher bill on repair costs and those types of things. So a lot of people even try to find stations that sell non-ethanol gasoline, you know, just pure gas that they can get, and they search those out and try to get that type. But I was talking about ethanol in a little bit broader sense. I was talking about a little bit more of the whole concept of ethanol, specifically the idea of the ethanol mandate or the ethanol subsidies that take place. And the reason why this is an issue, of course, right now is because we are just a couple days away from the Iowa caucus. And most of the people running in the Iowa caucus, especially on the GOP side, most of the people running there have really supported the idea of ethanol subsidies for them to continue, and not just continue, but they're actually scheduled to increase here shortly. And so they've political expediency is won out, and they have said that they're for it. Well, is that really a conservative viewpoint? You know, conservatives typically, historically, haven't been for government subsidies in this level, at least not these long-term ones. It seemed that this thing seemed like it's going to be never-ending here now. But a couple of the candidates, I think specifically Ted Cruz and also Rand Paul, have been outspoken about their opposition to these subsidies and saying outright that they're going to put an end to it. In fact, Newsmax has a story. It says Cruz takes on the ethanol subsidies. Ted Cruz, the article goes on to say, has dared to provoke the ire of one of the most ruthless and vengeful political forces on the planet. And no, it's not Donald Trump. The Texas senator has crossed the ethanol industry in Iowa, which is a little like getting on the wrong side of the Catholic Church in Vatican City, the article goes on to say. And the article talks about the fact that he's made no bones about it, that he is going to try to do away with this subsidy. He's going to phase it out. I think it's a five-year plan to phase it out over those 5 years. So I want to talk about that on the program here today. Who better to do that with than with Phil Kirpin? Phil is the president of American Commitment. The website is AmericanCommitment.org. Phil does a number of other things. He's a leading free market policy analyst and an advocate in Washington. And then even before joining American Commitment, he was a principal policy and legislative strategist for at the Americans for Prosperity for over 5 years, and he's got more on his resume besides that. Phil, but it's a pleasure to have you back on the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Hey, Kevin. Wonderful to be with you.
Phil, let's talk about this this issue of ethanol. I think it actually has another name, the Renewable Fuel Standard, I think is what it's officially known by. But educate us a little bit about how we got here with this whole ethanol mandate and what's currently taking place.
Well, Congress originally passed this in 2005, and they extended it and expanded it in 2007. And so this was a Republican Congress with a Republican president that originally passed this law. And what they did is they essentially created a 15-year schedule from 2007 through 2022. And for each year, they set a total volume of the, you know, number of millions of gallons of ethanol that would be required by law to be blended into the country's fuel supply. And they tried to predict this for 15 years, which is really folly for Congress, congressmen to think that they can predict the size of the United States fuel supply for 15 years. And in fact, they predicted it very, very poorly. And the situation that we now have and have had for the last couple of years is that the statutory requirements, the number of gallons that are required by statute, are impossibly high. And if they were allowed to take effect, there would be a major price shock and major supply chain disruptions and a lot of problems. And so the Obama administration has actually waived the statutory volume for both 2015 and 2016. So for the past 2 years, we've been frozen at essentially the 2014 level. And the 2014 level, which is what we're at right now, can be complied with by selling 10% ethanol fuel, and that has become the most commonly used fuel in the United States. I put it in my car. You probably put it in your car, although I heard in your introduction you sometimes look for the ethanol-free stuff, but around here I don't even see that on offer most of the time. And so most people in America are using 10% ethanol fuel, and the current level of the mandate, where it's been with the waiver the last 2 years, can be complied with the fuel mix that's currently in the United States. The real danger, what I really fear, is that we might have a president next year who will not issue a waiver, who will insist on the statutory level, the number that Congress set back in 2007, being applied as written. And that number for 2017 cannot be complied with 10% ethanol. It would require significant sales of higher ethanol blends of, you know, 15, 20, 25, what have you. But for practical reasons, it would probably require selling a lot more of what's called E85, which is 85% ethanol fuel. And that's because most cars on the road cannot use more ethanol than 10%, the E10. For most cars, you will void your car's warranty. You can cause serious engine damage if you put even 15% ethanol in your car. Now, there's a small number of cars, mostly late model vehicles from a few manufacturers, especially General Motors, that are what are called flex fuel vehicles that can use gasoline, can use methanol, can use ethanol in basically any blend, and they can use the E85, the 85% ethanol fuel. But they are not going to unless that fuel is made much, much cheaper and regular gasoline or 10% ethanol is made much, much more expensive. That's the only way to make the economics work, so that the people who have those vehicles will go opt for the ethanol fuel, which, by the way, has much lower fuel mileage, so they have to fill up more often. So it needs to be cheaper for people to want to buy it. And so basically, because the market would have to adjust so dramatically in order to meet the requirement at the statutory level, the Congressional Budget Office, this is not an industry source, this is the Congressional Budget Office, sort of the nonpartisan scorekeeper up on Capitol Hill, they've looked at this. They say that if we do not have a waiver for 2017, if we've got the statutory level in effect for 2017, the price impact for regular 10% ethanol, which is the most common fuel in the United States, that'll go up 13 to 26 cents per gallon in 2017 because of the ethanol mandate increasing. And for diesel fuel, we're looking at 30 to 51 cents per gallon. So we're looking at significant price increases. Of course, that E85, the 85% ethanol fuel, that would drop in price dramatically, 91 cents to $1.27 per gallon decline. And that's because of what I just said, because the only way they'll meet that requirement is if the market adjusts to get a lot more people, basically the small number of people who have cars that can take it, they've got to have a price incentive to switch to that E85, and basically everyone else is going to be paying a lot more at the pump. And so it's a really bad policy, extremely disruptive, extremely costly for people who are finally enjoying lower prices at the pump to be hit with this big increase come 2017. And yet we've got two presidential candidates on the Republican side who have said they would let the statutory level hit in 2017, Trump and Huckabee. We've got all of the Democrats saying that they would let the statutory level hit. That's Sanders, Clinton, and Martin O'Malley, mm-hmm. who interestingly supported the waiver when he was governor of Maryland, but now is against it as a presidential candidate. And then you've got the rest of these Republican candidates who've said they're for keeping the ethanol mandate but have not taken a specific position on whether they would waive the 2017 level or not. And in fact, I asked the Rubio campaign this specific question, would he, because he said that he's in favor of keeping the ethanol mandate. I said, well, would he issue a waiver in 2017 to avoid this big jump in prices? And the campaign told me he has taken no position on that. So, you know, we've got some guys, we've got Cruz and Rand Paul on the one end with the position that I favor, which is getting rid of the mandate. Then you've got Trump and Huckabee at the other extreme of saying keep the statutory level even with this huge price spike that's coming, along with the Democrats. Then you've got the other candidates in between saying keep the mandate but not necessarily saying what they would do about a waiver.
I imagine that there's an environmental aspect to this, that hey, let's burn corn because of evil gasoline, you know, and the emissions and so forth. So there's this environmental aspect mixed with this America's love for farmers. And so those two things together conspire to have the Republicans then decide, hey, we got to do something here to help these farmers sell this a bumper crop of corn that they have. They can turn it into gas. Let's go ahead and form these subsidies. Is that the right way of thinking?
Well, the you know, it's interesting because the original reasoning behind this, when Congress passed it in 2005 and expanded it in 2007, it was a pretty bipartisan thing at the time, and it was a pretty bipartisan thing because the Democrats thought this would be good for the environment. They thought this will be much better to burn than oil. It'll be good for global warming and so forth. And the Republicans kind of said, well, you know, we don't want to be so reliant for security reasons on foreign sources of energy. We ought to have this as a domestic alternative to petroleum-based fuels. And those were kind of the two main rationales. And they've both been proven totally wrong with time. We've learned that ethanol is actually worse for the environment than gasoline because, and this is interesting, it's not immediately obvious, but this has been proven out over time, because we now dedicate about 40% of the U.S. corn crop to ethanol. That's corn for the most part that used to be exported, and the decline in corn exports has been replaced in the rest of the world with production of corn abroad that required, bringing into cultivation environmentally sensitive areas like wetlands and so forth, areas that had never been used in the past for agriculture. And on net, there have now been a number of studies showing that ethanol actually increases global warming because of the land use effects that it has globally. And, in fact, even Al Gore admitted it was a big mistake, and he now opposes ethanol for those environmental reasons, and he admits that he supported it principally because of presidential politics in Iowa, because he wanted to appeal to corn farmers to have higher incomes there. And so sort of the original rationales for this, the environmental and the national security rationale, of course, was before the fracking boom and horizontal drilling, and now, of course, America is the number one petroleum-producing country in the world, and we're exporting crude. And so the whole position where, you know, we wanted to move off of oil because we didn't have it and we were in terminal decline, it's now the opposite. We're now in oil production boom, a glut, in fact, of oil. We've got, you know, some economic problems now associated with prices being too low in some areas, although I enjoy that personally at the pump. In production areas, they're suffering from it. And so those original rationales have sort of fallen by the board, and what we're down to now is this idea that the mandate is good because of all of the people who work in the ethanol processing plants and those jobs and, you know, the income for corn growers and so forth. And what I think that argument misses is it's now a mature industry. It doesn't need subsidies. It doesn't need mandates. Ethanol industry is not going away. It doesn't need government support anymore. And in fact, most analysts think that 10% ethanol fuel would remain the most common fuel in the country, even without a mandate, because it's an easily available source of octane. Pure gasoline has octane ratings in the 70s, and so they've got to add something to it to get up to the rated octanes that you see on the pump, the 87, 91, 93. Ethanol is probably the most cost-effective way to do that, even absent the mandate. And so you probably would continue to see an ethanol industry pretty similar in size to what we have right now in a world without the mandate. What you will not see is this big increase, this big artificial increase that would come from allowing the mandate to continue to ratchet up. And so, in my judgment, what's really on the margin here is not so much are we going to eliminate this industry by getting rid of the mandate. I think the industry can stand on its own 2 feet at this point. The question is more, are we going to allow the force of government to increase the amount of ethanol that's used to totally irrational levels that cannot be absorbed without a major market adjustment that's going to be very expensive for people.
Mm-hmm. I imagine there's an aspect here, too, about the cost of food when you're taking away the corn. And corn is used in so many different products, not that many people would be surprised, but you'll see corn syrup and, you know, corn byproducts that are used in many, many different products throughout the market. So if corn is being used for fuel, then obviously there's less corn than on the market, less corn on the market, supply and demand, the cost of corn is going to go up as well. So I mean, there's a component there, but I want to get to the point that you just mentioned about whether the government then should be propping this up. That is not typically a conservative position. In that article that I alluded to in the beginning of the broadcast, where it said that Cruz takes on subsidies, it says Cruz's stand against this act is its reckless courage, you know, talking about that he is being really courageous in taking on the ethanol mandate, especially in Iowa, where he has banked so much of his campaign on doing well in Iowa. Do you agree?
I do. I think it was, what Cruz and also Rand Paul have done really runs contrary to conventional political wisdom, which is that if you want to be competitive in Iowa, you've got to pander to this industry. And, you know, this is an industry. Now, I've always found that a little odd personally, because I assume there are a lot more people who drive cars in Iowa than grow corn, even in Iowa. But they're extremely organized politically. And, you know, the governor is a huge ethanol supporter. His son is working for the ethanol industry, running around the state protesting every campaign appearance of Ted Cruz's. They've got all of these TV ads that they're running. And, you know, they're heavily invested in keeping a government mandate that people buy their product that ratchets up over time. You know, I can understand why it's in their self-interest to do that. And they've been in a panic, really, for the past month or so since Cruz became the front runner in Iowa. They've been in this sort of panic that if Cruz does in fact win, it will disprove that conventional political wisdom that you've got to be in favor of Iowa for political reasons. And, you know, they've actually said that it'll be the end of the ethanol mandate if Cruz wins, because it'll sort of expose that the politics of it are not untouchable. And so I think that's why you've seen this incredible struggle. And, you know, I actually, and this is unfortunate given what a terrible policy I think ethanol is, this ethanol mandate is. I think that Donald Trump's full embrace of this mandate and saying he won't even have a waiver in 2017, he's going to let this big price spike happen, I think that has a lot to do with the reversal we've seen in the polls over the last few weeks. I mean, we've got sort of this tacit endorsement from the governor who, put on a Make America Great hat and posed with Donald Trump's son and, said we've got to stop Ted Cruz. And, I think unfortunately, this message is getting some traction. And it's going to be pretty interesting to see what happens on Monday night, because, if Trump wins, I think the industry will point to that and say, look, you better never try to get rid of this mandate again. We're too powerful politically. You've seen what will happen to you. But if Cruz wins, it'll be the opposite message, that they threw everything they could at it. And in Iowa, in the heart of the industry's power, they were unable to stop somebody who was opposed to their mandate. So the stakes for this policy issue are very high on Monday, regardless of sort of who you want to end up as the nominee. And, you know, they're obviously all, you know, it's only one contest out of many for that. But the policy stakes in terms of ethanol, I would say, are very, very high.
In the article that I read that you had put together on this, might be even in a press release, but I remember it saying towards the end of it then that if Cruz wins in Iowa, it's actually a win for everyone who fills their gas tank on a weekly or biweekly basis or something. But if Trump wins and he has this extremely pro-mandate position, it may be a win for the people in the ethanol industry. It may be a win for certain people in Iowa itself in the corn industry, but it's not as big of a win for the American people across the country. Is that a fair way to put it?
Well, I think, if he in fact is elected president and follows through on his promise not to issue a waiver in 2017, it'll be very, very costly at the pump, for the reasons I explained and the numbers that I put out there, the 13 to 26 cents a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one would hope that this could be explained to him and, he would end up granting the waiver anyway, despite what he said in Iowa. But, you got to take people at their word, at least until they change their word. And I think the precedent that would be maintained here would be you cannot take on the ethanol industry and be competitive. And that would be very bad for efforts in Congress to get this thing repealed or reformed. And there are a lot of efforts to say, look, maybe we can't repeal it for political reasons, but we've got to get rid of these impossible numbers that hang over us every year unless a waiver is granted and have a more realistic schedule that's in line with market reality. And I don't know if there's going to be a political appetite to even do that if the person who takes the most extreme position on this ends up winning the state of Iowa. And so the policy stakes on this particular issue are very high.
I think a couple things, too, that you've mentioned along the way, the idea of the unintended consequences, again, by these government programs is once again highlighted by this, where we saw now that people that advocated for it in the beginning have now, like Al Gore, have now withdrawn their advocacy for it after they actually see what it's done. Boy, we've heard that story over and over again. We also, the idea that, you mentioned that it was a 15-year program. Schedule that was supposed to roll out. Well, these things have a way of taking on a life of their own afterwards, and once they're implemented, very, very difficult to even adjust them later on, much less to do away with it altogether. And I think we should learn some lessons from that as well. Let me ask you one more question on, and this it may be just a tad bit outside of the scope of what we were talking about with just ethanol, but in energy and in subsidies in more general way, is Cruz consistent on this? Does he also, you may or may not know this, but is he consistent that he opposes subsidies in other areas, like possibly even for the, the energy companies or gasoline or oil and these types of companies as well?
Yeah, he supports a bill that was introduced by Mike Lee from Utah and Mike Pompeo from Kansas in the House that would eliminate all energy subsidies for every energy type, and would use that money to reduce the corporate income tax for every company in the country across the board. And so basically replacing targeted tax benefits and subsidies that are directed at particular energy types with tax relief for all businesses in the country, basically. And I think that's a sensible approach. Hasn't got a lot of traction yet, but maybe if we have a president who supports it, it might. But it's interesting because the attacks from the ethanol industry in Iowa against Cruz have been that he's a hypocrite because he supports subsidies for big oil and he's owned by big oil and he's from Texas and so he's an oil man and all this kind of thing. But I don't think those criticisms have merit because his position has been that he would eliminate all energy subsidies and mandates, and I think that's a very consistent principled position.
Well, I thought it was it spoke well of him, especially now that you point out about the consistency as well. It speaks well of him about the holding to what is our true conservative principles on this issue, even though it could have cost them dearly politically. And obviously, I think that's refreshing just to see somebody with principle on the issue and sticking to those principles, even if it costs them politically. So I'm pretty happy to hear that. And thanks, Phil, for bringing this to our attention. We really appreciate the work that you do and the work there at the American Commitment.
Absolutely, and thanks for having me.
All right. That was Phil Kirpin, as I mentioned just a moment ago, with American Commitment. He is the president of American Commitment. Their website is www.americancommitment.org. That's www.americancommitment.org. Now, that was just one of the issues that they have out on their site. They're talking about a number of things, like the headline on the website right there right now says, Stop Obama's Internet Takeover, so they deal with those types of issues as well. But this was one that obviously is very, very important because of the Iowa caucus coming up here on Monday. So glad to hear that about Ted Cruz.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.